विशिष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम बैक टू द भगवत टू द भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स इन द नेक्टर ऑफ डिवोशन। इन द प्रीवियस क्लास वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट द एलिजिबिलिटी ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस। वी डिस्कस कनिष्ठ, मध्यमा एंड उत्तमा, एंड नाउ वी मूव फॉरवर्ड। So before we move forward, we would like to discuss one topic related with eligibility, that the important point in the process of bhakti is recognizing that we have a particular adhikar based on our taste, our attraction towards Krishna. And attraction towards Krishna is not just something sentimental, and oh, how much do I speak about the esoteric pastimes of Krishna? How much am I always in the mood of Vrindavan? That is all good. But actually, we see there were many disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who were living in Vrindavan or in Mayapur, and they did not fulfill the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They did not venture out from the holy dham to travel all over the world to share Krishna consciousness. It was Srila Prabhupada who took that mandate. It was Srila Prabhupada who had faith that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prophecy will come true, and not just will come true, Srila Prabhupada took it as his responsibility to make that prophecy come true. So, the advancement, when we talk about taste, the taste is not just something superficial. The taste is not just, oh, I think about esoteric pastimes of Krishna, kind of pastimes which nobody has heard. And that taste is a sign of advancement. Actually, when you talk about taste, it is a taste to serve and please Krishna. And speaking Krishna Katha in a way that will please Krishna. You know, if we speak advanced pastimes of Krishna and all that, we talk about intimate conjugal pastimes of Radha Krishna, and then that increases material desires in the people, then is that really helping those souls come to close to Krishna? Will that really be pleasing to Krishna? What Srila Prabhupada did was, he spoke the necessary message. When Srila Prabhupada said, my purports are my devotional ecstasies, what did he mean? No, a devotee's ecstasy is not self-centered, it is Krishna-centered. That means that which gives Krishna ecstasy, a devotee, that devotee Krishna, that is the source of a devotee's ecstasy. So what will give Krishna ecstasy is when the souls who are far away from him come close to him. So whatever obstacles are there, whatever misconceptions are there, if we remove those misconceptions, then that will enable the souls to come closer to Krishna. So when we talk about who is an advanced devotee, who is a madhyama adhikari, who is a uttama adhikari, that should be based on how much that person is committed to the service of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada had that kind of extraordinary, unparalleled commitment. And that's how in old age he was ready to travel all over the world, sharing Krishna consciousness with the people. And then Srila Prabhupada's followers within ISKCON are also doing the same thing in their according to their own capacity, according to their adhikar. So sometimes some people, they say, oh, in ISKCON you don't talk about advanced Gaudiya Tattva, oh, you don't talk about Rasa Tattva, you don't talk about Raganuga Bhakti, you don't talk about this, you don't talk about that. And they try to denigrate or minimize. No, the important point is to recognize that what is appropriate for people, that is talked about. And as devotees advanced, you know, they will naturally understand what they need for their nourishment, and they will seek that. Prematurely jumping to advanced topics is not necessarily a sign of advancement. Most often it is not a sign of advancement. Often it is a sign of actually arrogance. That one thinks that one is qualified when one is not qualified. At one time the devotees in ISKCON, some of the devotee leaders, they formed a group and they started focusing on the esoteric pastimes of Krishna. And they called themselves the Gopi Bhava Club. They said, you know, ultimately our goal is to develop Gopi Bhava. So they started discussing about those pastimes so that they will develop the bhava of the gopis. When Prabhupada came to know about it, Prabhupada was quite annoyed. He was outraged, in fact. And he said, first we have to first we have to become qualified, otherwise we'll misunderstand these things. And Srila Prabhupada, it is not that he did not want devotees to advance to higher levels, but he wanted them to move gradually to those higher levels, progressively. So, the Srila Prabhupada was Uttam Adhikari, and one who follows his footsteps will also become elevated. One who follows his instructions, sorry, not exactly footsteps, nobody can follow Srila Prabhupada's footsteps entirely. And what he has done is unparalleled. Even if somebody becomes a very great preacher, still Prabhupada is the first person who has spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and he has done that. So he's done that all alone, single-handedly, without any institutional support. At least that's how he started. So Srila Prabhupada's instructions, if we follow, we will all make spiritual advancement. And those who have followed his instructions for 20, 30, 40 years, they have also made a lot of spiritual advancement. And under their guidance, we can all chart the path back to Godhead. So whatever are advanced subjects, they will come. We shouldn't think that just because somebody has a taste for speaking Radha Krishna Leela, that itself makes a person spiritually advanced. Now, the spiritual advancement of a teacher is based on how much that person wants to please Krishna, and Krishna will be pleased when one speaks appropriately according to the level of the audience. Now, the next chapter we'll move forward to, in the Nectar of Devotion. This chapter is entitled Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation. Now, actually, this chapter is entirely a set of quotations. All that is mentioned, there are various quotations which talk about how a devotee doesn't desire liberation, but a devotee instead desires simply to love and serve Krishna. So Prabhupada now, for example, quotes Pruthu Maharaj, and he's offering prayers to the Lord when the Lord has appeared before him, when his 100th, he decides to forego doing the 100th fire sacrifice at the instruction of Brahmaji. And then what happens? He is telling, my dear Lord, I don't want liberation, because if after liberation I have no chance of hearing the glories of your Lordship, then I don't want that. On the other hand, what I want is, I shall simply pray unto you that you may give me millions of tongues and millions of ears so that I can constantly chant and hear of your transcendental glories. So here Pruthu Maharaj gives a very important reason why a devotee doesn't want liberation. Because in liberation there is no opportunity to serve Krishna. Dhyamananna grinanti vinamat sevanam jana. In Kapildev's prayers, in Kapildev's instructions, Kapildev also tells this, that he gives the list of the five kinds of liberations, and then he says Dhyamananna grinanti. And even if that is given to such a person, given to a devotee, the devotee doesn't accept it. Why? Because in that vinamat sevanam jana. So if there is no service for me available in this, then the devotee doesn't accept this. So of course, in one of the liberations, Sayujya, when we merge into Krishna, there is no opportunity for service, and devotee certainly doesn't want that. But there are other liberations, Salokya, Sarishta, Samipya, Sarishti. So Salokya means living on the same abode as the Lord. Samipya is living in close proximity of the Lord. Sarupya means having the same form as the Lord. And Sarishti is having the same opulence as the Lord. So these are all different kinds of liberation. And then there's Sayujya. Sayujya is merging with the Lord. So most often when the word liberation is used by people, they have the connotation of impersonal liberation. That means Sayujya, merging into the Lord. And in Sayujya, when one imagines at merging, then there is no chance for service over there. Now, in the other forms of liberation, there is a possibility of service. But if one gets those other forms of liberations without the opportunity for service, then it is said that the pure devotee doesn't want this at all. So certainly the pure devotee doesn't want Sayujya, and he doesn't want other forms of liberation also if the opportunity for service is not there. And that's why Pruthu Maharaj is saying that I want to serve, and how do I want to serve? Serve with my senses. You know, I want to ears and tongue, tongues and ears, so that I can glorify you, I can hear your glories, relish your glories. This is the mood of a devotee. So liberation is considered to be the pinnacle of spiritual achievement by many spiritualists, and by the impersonalists especially. And the idea that bhakti is greater than mukti, or bhakti, yeah, bhakti is greater than mukti, it is, to many people, it is quite scandalous. In fact, they feel, how mukti is the greatest, how can bhakti be greater? In fact, we see that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, or in Chaitanya Leela, not exactly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, there is Haridas Thakur's pastime with Gopal Chakravarti. And Haridas Thakur said that just by the preliminary chanting of the holy names, one can get liberation. And he said the real fruit of holy name is not liberation, because liberation comes quite easily by chanting. Actually, it is prema, attaining pure love of God. And this Gopal Chakravarti is Brahmin, and he was outraged. He said, liberation is such a great thing, how can you trivialize liberation like this? And he said that if I curse you, that if what you said is not true, he actually first did a character assassination of Haridas Thakur. You know, there is ad hominem attacks. Ad hominem means instead of arguing against the countering the argument of the person, the opponent attacks the character of the person only. So that's considered unethical many times. So he did ad hominem attack. He says that this person, he is a mlecha, and he is claiming that he knows better than us Brahmanas. And he said, what does this mlecha do? Actually, now he was so self-righteous, he even went to the extreme of saying that actually this is a sign of Kali Yuga, that mlechas are instructing Brahmanas. And then he almost spoke like a curse. He said, if what you said is false, if the holy name does not grant liberation, then let your nose fall away. And when he spoke this, actually there were many great learned people over there, and they understood the exalted level of Haridas Thakur. And they put their hands to the ears, and they started chastising almost Gopal Chakravarti. Now, he was also Brahmin, he couldn't chastise, he just walked away from there in half. But eventually, after that, what happened? His own nose fell away. Because what Haridas Thakur was saying was based on scripture. Scripture does say this. So the point why I am discussing this is that in orthodox society, orthodox Vedic society, now bhakti is it orthodox? Yes, it is orthodox in the sense that it has been going on for millennia. But the way orthodox society was in India during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time and before that also was that the caste system was quite deep rooted, and Brahmanas claimed privileges. So the idea was they did not recognize the power and glory of bhakti so much, and their idea was mukti is very great. So for such people, the idea that bhakti can be greater than mukti is something which is, as I said, scandalous. But it is true, that is what the scriptures tell. And this is such an important topic to establish, that Rupa Goswami in the Bhaktisamrita Sindhu and Srila Prabhupada in his Nectar of Devotion devote a full chapter to it. So this chapter is actually nothing but quotes, and this also illustrates the point of Nana Shastra Vicharani Kanipuno Sadhana Samsthapako. So let's look at the various quotes briefly. I will not explain all the quotes, but the sheer fact that a full chapter has been devoted to this topic indicates the importance of the topic. So now Tej Shri Prabhupada says that Shukadeva Goswami talks about Bharat Maharaj, and he says that he did not accept material opulences, and they said, what to speak of material opulences? He does not even care for liberation which is aspired for by great. He says, what to speak of material opulences? So a devotee has such a higher taste that nothing is wanted for a devotee, neither liberation nor material opulences. And similarly, Vritrasur Anakapaksham Parameshtyam Yoga Siddhin Apunarbhavamva. So na apunarbhavamva, he says, I do not want anything else. Naakapristam na cha parameshtyam. He says, na yoga siddhim na punarbhavamva. Na yoga siddhim, I do not want yoga siddhi, na apunarbhavamva. I do not want, apunarbhavam is liberation. I do not want even that. All that I want is your association and your service. So here we see so many verses which illustrate this point. And this is the famous verse, Narayana para sarve na kutaschana bibhyate Swarga pavarka narkeshu apitulyartha darshanaha. So apitulyartha, devotee considers everything material equivalent. So what has this got to do with liberation? So Srila Prabhupada specifies that, or in fact any situation whatsoever. So he says, Then Nakutashchan Swarga Apavarga Narkeshu. So Apavarga refers to liberation. They get liberation from material. Why they don't care? Because Narayana Parasarva, they're completely devoted to Narayana. And for them, in that devotion to Narayana, there's such happiness that nothing else is wanted. Narayana Parasarva. And like that, there is Indra is addressing Deity also. So he's so like that, there are verses, many verses. And then here this famous verse of Prahlad Maharaj. Then what is the use of spiritual emancipation or liberation from material bondage? As if one is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord and always relishing the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is absolutely no necessity for these. And like that, the quotes go on. You can look at the various quotes. Then it's an impressive compilation. And the now it goes out into other books also apart from Bhagavatam. There's also Hayashirsha Pancharatra is there, and like that Narad Pancharatra is also there. So there are various scriptures from which Srila Prabhupada is quoting, from Rupa Goswami is quoting, and Srila Prabhupada is paraphrasing over here. Now of course there's the famous quote of Hanumanji. So Hanuman certainly doesn't want liberation. In fact, for Hanuman, the idea of anything other than the service of the Lord would be appalling. You know, how can he live without the service of the Lord? So Hanuman also says, I don't want liberation, my dear Lord. Nothing. I simply want to serve you. So this is the mood of a devotee. Now, how does it apply practically to us? See, liberation also has two aspects. Liberation has one aspect of what we are liberated from, and second is what we are liberated to. So what is the difference between the two? What is liberated from means that, okay, where am I coming out of and what am I liberated to? So where am I going after that? Somebody is in a jail and that person comes out of a jail. Oh, I am liberated from the jail. But if a person is taken out of a jail and is put on a wasteland where there is no food, where there is no water, where there is no other life, there were no other people, and it's an island and cannot go out of the island also, then the person will say, okay, you're free to go wherever you are, but it's still practically in a jail only. It's a different kind of jail. In it. So there are two aspects of where I am liberated from and where I am liberated to. So if I am liberated from one place, that is because I want liberation from a place because I feel that is very miserable. But if I am, where I am liberated to is important. If I, for a devotee, for the impersonalist, the focus is primarily on where I am liberated from, because they think, oh, this world is a place of such misery. And they are true, that there is a lot of misery in this world, and materialists who do not recognize that this world is a place of misery are even more unfortunate. They are like so drunk that they don't even recognize that they are drunk. So it's important to recognize this world is a place of misery, but their focus is only on, okay, this world is a place of misery, world is a place of misery, I have to get out. But devotee's focus is on not where I am trapped, not just from what I am liberated, but to what I am liberated. And the devotees see that if I am getting liberated into the impersonal Brahman, where I have no scope for serving Krishna, then that is of no use to me. Because there I will be deprived of the association in the service of Krishna and the nectar that is available thereof. So if I want to real liberation, a devotee is concerned or not just what I am liberated from, but what I am liberated to. And that's why the devotees pray that as long as I'm engaged in your service. So often the rejection of liberation is done in parallel with an insistence, or a rather strong request, insistent request almost. Insistent not in a negative sense, but or not in an obstinate sense, insistent in the sense of expressing the fervent desire. So in that sense, they want to engage in devotional service, because if you engage in devotional service, we are as good as liberated. By engaging in devotional service, eventually we will become liberated. One time a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, so, Amiji, how many pure devotees are there in your movement? So Prabhupada asked one of the devotees, how many devotees do we have? And he gave a particular answer, that many pure devotees we have. The devotees started saying, pure devotees? You know, how can we be pure devotees? We have so many desires, so many material desires. So I said, you are following the process of pure devotion, you will become pure devotees eventually. You are following the process, you are aspiring for pure devotional service, so you will become. So there's like a raw mango is there and a ripe mango is there. The only difference is that the passage of time is required. And as long as the raw mango stays attached to the ripe mango, it will become liberated. So what we are saying here is that when a devotee is unconcerned, devotee has rejected liberation, what does it mean? They know that devotional service itself is the supreme liberation. Because in devotional service, one can do that activity which will please Krishna, and that thereby that will give us happiness also. And if we keep devotional service, ultimately we will become liberated. So Prabodhananda Saraswati in his Chaitanya Manjusha says that Kaivalyam Narakayate, that Kaivalya, impersonal liberation, is that is considered a very exalted destination by the jnanis and the yogis. He says Narakayate, it's like hell. Because for a devotee, anything which is without the service of Krishna is hell. So naturally, Kaivalyam Narakayate. So now, you can read the remaining chapter. We'll move to the next chapter here. Now he talks about the purity of devotional service. So what exactly is the purity of devotional service? Prabhupada uses the word purity here in the sense that it is purely independent. It does not need anything else. In fact, Prabhupada summarizes the theme of the previous chapter here when he says, in his broad, can be summarized thus. So the previous chapter summarizes, as long as one is materially inclined or desirous of merging into the spiritual effulgence, one cannot enter into the realm of pure devotional service. So that's why a devotee rejects liberation and thereby expresses the determination to enter into pure devotional service and the determination to stay situated in pure devotional service. When Prabhupada quotes Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radukshati Ahaitukiya Pratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. That's Rupa Goswami quoting this. And now, this is an interesting application of this verse. Generally, Prabhupada would quote this Ahaituki Apratihata, unmotivated and uninterrupted, in terms of that this is how we should practice bhakti. Now, when are we going to practice pure, when can you say we are practicing pure devotional service? When our devotional service is uninterrupted. And no matter what happens, we don't let our devotional service get interrupted. We keep steadily practicing bhakti. Then that is the indication that we are practicing pure devotional service. But there's another way of looking at it, that pure devotional service itself cannot be interrupted by anything material. Because ahaituki, it is not initiated by anything material. It does not have any material cause. That we have discussed earlier, how it does not depend on birth or piety or things like that. And that's what he'll be emphasized over here again. So because pure devotional service does not depend on anything material, it is not caused by anything material, so it will not be interrupted by anything material also. If an airplane is flying in the sky, then even if there is some disturbance on the earth, maybe there is some flood or there is some fire, now that is not going to affect the airplane. The airplane is high above and is going to keep flying like that. So similarly, pure devotional service is transcendental. It does not depend on anything material. It is not caused by and it is not interrupted by anything material. So in this context, he gives various points. So is janma, birth, a factor in devotional service? So categorically, no. And Prabhupada quotes how there was a struggle in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Prabhupada used the word in the Middle Ages. So in the Middle Ages refers to after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance and his disappearance, when there was a Nityananda Vamsha, which was filled with caste Goswamis. Caste Goswamis means that these people claim that because we are born in a particular past, we are Brahmins, and therefore we alone have a right to that the practice and spreading of, you can see this, they further claim that the practice and spreading of devotional service belonged only to their particular class, which was known as Nityananda Vamsha. Nityananda Vamsha. So Nityananda Vamsha refers to those people who claim to be descendants of Nityananda Prabhu, and they claim that they have a monopoly on the practice and the sharing of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So Prabhupada writes how the acharyas fought against him. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a reformer, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was a revolutionary. So, reformer means one who brings about gentle changes. But revolutionary is just shakes up things. So, if a building has some problem, okay, can you repaint this like this? Can you redo this? Can you change this slightly? That is a reformer. But revolutionary means, yes, building, there's so many problems, just blow it up, we'll construct a new building only. So, in one sense, revolutionary does radical things. So, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur started the program to rescue Gaudiya Vaishnavism from the stronghold from the stronghold of the caste Goswamis. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was actually born in the Shakta family. He was not born in the Goswami family. But he, by his own search for the absolute truth, he studied Brahmoism, he studied Christianity, especially Unitarian Christianity. There are two broad sects there in Christianity, there are Unitarian and Trinitarian. So those who accept the concept of Trinity and those who are Unitarian, I won't go into theology of Christianity over here. But he explored various paths, and finally, when he studied Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was very profoundly attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he took initiation within the Gaudiya Sampradaya by accepting as his guru Vipin Bihari Goswami. And in that way, because he was well educated, he was a part of the Bhadra Loka, he brought respectability to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He started sharing Gaudiya Vaishnavism, respectability among the educated people also. And then from him, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was born, and Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur actually took things further. And that's why there was he often had confrontations. We know that famous confrontation which happened in Midnapur, Brahmana versus Vaishnava. There was a debate, and Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur whitewashed his opponents, practically speaking. And there was a stampede of appreciative people practically over there. When Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur defeated all of his opponents completely, and the people just came forward and tried to touch his feet. And everybody is coming forward so vigorously, there had already been stampede. So the local administrators over there, they brought buckets of water, asked Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur to sit down and put his feet in the buckets of water, and then they took the water and sprinkled it on the people. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was so profoundly learned. So, and there were also attempts on his life. At one time when he was in Navadvip, people even attacked him, and his parikrama when he was in Vrindavan at that time, sometimes the main temples got closed, they did not open because he had actually initiated people who were non-Brahmins, and he had even made some of them into sannyasis also. So these were things which were, they said, no, we cannot do this. So at first they said, actually non-Brahmanas cannot even practice Gaudiya Vishnu. Some of them would say like that. But then they said, okay, non-Brahmins can practice, but they cannot teach. But actually, there is no such rule. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a person who was, what to speak, a non-Brahmin, a person who was a non-Hindu entirely. That is Haridas Thakur. Into the topmost teacher, even into Namacharya. And similarly, we see Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they had lost their caste. But still, they were also accepted as founding acharya, founding teachers in our movement. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not have this, any sort of thing. So, Janma is not a factor. Anybody can be born in any family, but still that person can make rapid spiritual advancement by taking shelter of Krishna through the process of bhakti. So, the purity of devotional service is such that an impure birth does not make any difference. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, even people are born in lower caste, it doesn't make any difference. So Prabhupada writes, it's a great hard struggle for some time for Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, attempts on his life, and we discussed all that. And then Prabhupada writes, it is on the basis of his position that anyone can now become a Gaudiya Vaishnava from any part of the world or any part of the universe. Prabhupada is a very universalist vision over here. Any part of the universe. And then Prabhupada quotes various references for this point. He quoting from the Skanda Puran, Kashi Khanda portion. And then, now this is a, he's quoting even from the Padma Puran, Vasishtha Muni studying King Dilipa. So you can read the quotes. So now this quote from Mayura, in the country of Skanda Puran, what does it state? It says, in fact, they look so beautiful that they surpass the ordinary Brahmanas. So not only can they practice, but actually they become greater than Brahmanas. That is the idea. So, now Prabhupada is so balanced. You know, first he says that, just he gives the famous example that just as by touching bell metal, he used the example which he has given in the Upadeshamrita also, that just by alchemy a lower metal can be converted into gold. Similarly, a person, whatever be the birth, can be converted into an exalted soul by initiation. So now immediately Prabhupada balances by saying that, oh, don't think that just by initiation you already become a great soul. He says you have to actually practice the rules and regulations, become purified, and then you'll become great souls. But the point is that opportunity to become advanced is there, open for everyone. So after talking about birth, then he talks about prayaschitta, then he talks about fall down. So now the word fall down generally we use in devotional service. Somebody is unable to follow the four regulative principles or has some other immoral behavior, then we call that as a fall down. Now in the path of karma kanda, the idea is that if one falls down, then one has to do prayaschitta, and only after doing atonement one becomes purified. Without that atonement, one remains pure, impure. Now in bhakti, one doesn't have to do any separate atonement. In fact, continuation of bhakti is itself an atonement. So when some devotees would have some difficulties in practice of Krishna consciousness, they would report to Srila Prabhupada. What would he tell them? He would tell them to intensify their devotional service. Now if some devotee has some serious problem in the following the standards, then such a devotee may not be given a leadership position in the movement. Or if the devotee is in a leadership position, temporarily or permanently, the leadership position will be removed. Now that is not because devotional service is not potent. Devotional service is so pure that whatever impurity a person may have, that impurity can be removed by devotional service. But that removal is done to protect that person and to protect others. To protect that person, that person, if one has a leadership position, one has so many responsibilities that often that may distract one from focusing on tapping the potency of pure devotional service and becoming purified. And similarly, others may think, okay, if that person is doing like that, that's okay. I can also do like that. No, that should not be a long message conveyed. So, when we say that no prayaschitta is required, that means that it's not that any kind of behavior is okay. No, the point is that actually whenever there is there is something which requires prayaschitta, what a devotee does is practices devotional service itself. And this is actually the theme of the sixth canto also, in the discussion between Shukdev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj about how, as the prayaschittas don't purify, they may just check the count, they may just prevent the sinful reactions from coming, but they don't purify the sinful mentality. That is purified only by bhakti. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasud parayana agham dhunvanti varsnena niharameva bhaskara. This says fog is removed as soon as the sun rises. So similarly, all impurities are removed, all sins are removed when bhakti to the Lord awakened. That is what is important. Now after talking about this, Prabhupada talks about there are three processes for elevating one to the blessed spiritual platform. They are karma, jnana and bhakti. So one who does bhakti does not have to do anything to do with karma and jnana. And then Prabhupada quotes several places, Narad Muni from the Uddhava Gita, and like that he quotes various things. Now Prabhupada goes on. So now actually the way Srila Prabhupada gives the quotes, all of them are combined together, but there are different issues which are being talked about. So one is where one is born, another is has one fallen. Even if one is fallen, one can continue devotional service. Devotional service does not require purification by any other process so that the person can practice devotional service. Similarly, now the theme that is starting from here is any person who is it, now the theme is that the devotional service is so potent that one does not need to be a part of varna ashram. So any person can be in any varna and any ashrama, one can practice devotional service and become elevated. And then giving up all occupational duties to be considered a first class man. So in fact, what he, Krishna is telling is that surrender to him makes a person a first class man. It is not that this being in a particular varna or ashrama is exalted. In fact, surrendering to Krishna is even more exalted. And then there are many other quotes. There's a quote which is Krishna Bhavita Klasat Naham. That how one is not a debtor to anyone. I am King Karuna Rani Charanan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam. If one surrenders to Lord Mukunda, Gato Mukunda Parittakratam. So if one Devrishi Nrapta Rani Charanan. So the idea is that whatever be a person's social situation, like in Varanashram or otherwise, one is not obliged to anyone else if one surrenders to the Supreme Lord. This also indicates that there is no contamination that can come for a devotee who is engaged in devotional service seriously. So devotional service is not dependent on any varna or any ashrama. It is dependent simply on devotional service itself. It's self-dependent. It's self-dependent or independent. It doesn't require anything else. It's not that one has to be in a higher varna to practice, nor is it that one has to be in a lower varna to practice. One can be in any varna, one can practice bhakti and become elevated. So we'll see. In the medieval ages, there was a bhakti renaissance all over India. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates appeared in Bengal, but like that, there are many other saints appeared in different parts of the country. And we'll see most of these saints were from the lower castes. And despite being from the lower castes, they were able to, they practiced devotional service, and not only they practiced, they inspired many, many people all over the country during their times. So, their devotion was not interrupted by their being from a lower varna or having a lower birth. So this may seem slightly different, birth and varna, but the point is, of course, in Vedic culture, varna was not determined only by birth, but even if a person is taking up some lower occupation, that does not make a person disqualified from practicing bhakti or even from teaching bhakti. When Srila Prabhupada came to India, and he brought his Western disciples with him. So it created a sensation in India to see these Western devotees in dhoti kurta, shirt, dhoti kurta and sari, and dancing and singing. And of course, although there was the appreciation, along with that there was some opposition also, some criticism also. So some letters appeared when the big successful program of Srila Prabhupada was reported in Times of India and other Indian newspapers. So at that time, those newspapers, they said that, what is this? Some people wrote letters and they're saying that, you know, this was Swamiji's, Bhaktivedanta Swami's disciples were interviewed, and some of them said that, you know, that one of them said that he was a truck driver earlier. And he said this indicated that he was a Shudra and he cannot become a proper Vaishnava. I'm just giving truck driver as an example. Different devotees coming from different backgrounds. And he said, therefore this person cannot. So Prabhupada read all the newspapers reports very carefully. And if anything connected with ISKCON was there in the news, Prabhupada was very eager to know what it was and to make sure that the public got the proper perception about Krishna consciousness. So he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Giriraj Prabhu at that time, now he is Maharaj, Giriraj Prabhu, that you can actually respond to these letters. And then Prabhupada himself responded to one or two letters, or he gave generally ideas to devotees. You should write this. And Prabhupada told them that actually, you know, whatever be the background of a person, whatever be the place, job a person is doing in the past, it doesn't matter. Because devotional service is transcendental. And now the person is engaged wholeheartedly in the service of Krishna. That is what is important. What happened earlier, what the person was doing earlier doesn't matter. So it's not that if I just change the electricity bulb in my house, I become an electrician by that. Similarly, somebody might be doing a particular activity that does not necessarily make that person belonging to that varna. There may be devotees who may be driving cars, there may be devotees who may be cleaning toilets, there may be devotees who may be, say, weaving cloth. That doesn't make them belong to any particular varna just by that activity performance. Bhakti is transcendental, and all these can be means by which a devotee can serve Krishna and move forward in Krishna's, in Krishna consciousness. So actually, now sometimes we may get lost in seeing what is happening. So actually this whole section, which is a long section here, in several paragraphs. So from here to here, the section, the same thing is in Karbhajami address Maharaj Nami. So three paragraphs, all of it is talking about that one verse, Devarishi Bhutaptana Ram Pitranam. And the point of quoting that verse is to tell us that bhakti is not dependent on anything material, bhakti is supremely pure. So nobody has to do anything for him. Nobody has to do anything to become purified so that the person can practice bhakti. No, the person, all, everybody, the person can, any position can practice bhakti. And Prabhupada quotes Saradharman Parityajya. And then he even quotes from Agastya Samhita and then again Srimad Bhagavatam. So 11th canto, often we will see that there are quotes in this section from the 11th canto. So now all this has concluded that pure devotional service does not require anything else. It's pure, it's independent. It can purify a person from whatever situation the person may be, and it can help that person to attain elevation, ultimately attain a destination that is higher than liberation. So now we come to the point of how to discharge devotional service. So here there is basically, this chapter basically set of 64 rules of how to, 64 items to practice devotional service. So I won't go into the items because we will be discussing those items after some time. Now let's focus on 64 items. So they fall into two categories actually. So here you can see that so there are 64 items of sadhana bhakti, out of which there are 20 items of primary importance, and those 20 items involve anukul and pratikul. That means 10 activities to accept, there's 1 to 10, and 11 to 20 are 10 activities to reject or to avoid. This is paravritti and nivritti. And then 44 additional items are also talked about over there. 20 plus 44, 64. So out of this, 21 to 59 are the items of sadhana. This is how one should practice sadhana. And then 60 to 64, there are the 5 potent forms of devotional service. In fact, this will comprise a separate chapter, and we will discuss it as we move forward. So now, what are these items which are talked about? The item, the 1 to 10 items, activities to accept in pravritti. Let's focus on this first. So for this we go into, so this chapter, you can just read the chapter now. This is a listing, and we can, we will discuss this list later as it is elaborated in Bhaktisvami Sindhu. Now, evidence regarding devotional principle. This chapters like this are actually, in one sense, the most difficult to translate, and they are also quite challenging to understand, because the idea is that these difficulties, evidences regarding devotional principles. So whatever principles Rupa Goswami mentioned over here, he will say that, okay, for this principle, this is the proof. For this principle, this is the proof. Proof means he will give quotes from scriptures to establish how this point is true. So now what we will do is we will look at waves of devotion also, and look at the Sanskrit equivalence of the term. So accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the first. It is called as Adav Guru Pada Ashraya. Adav means in the beginning. Guru Pada Ashraya. So take shelter of the Guru. Take shelter of the Guru. So spiritual life begins when we get initiation. Of course, what we are doing, spiritual life is never interrupted. So in that sense, what we are doing before initiation is also spiritual life. So we already have a relationship with the spiritual master, but that interrelationship becomes solidified and routinized by the determination of the candidates who are getting married.